Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here. We are live from the Kintech studio. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at DunbarLumber.com. The hotline is brought to you by Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. The first call, the only call. Brendan Batchelor is going to join us momentarily. It is a Canucks game day. We're all sitting here waiting for Elias Pettersson news and updates and further information, but the Canucks have a game to play tonight. It's hard to focus. It's a potentially massive, massive deal here if this deal gets done.
I actually was thinking about this during the Penguins game, which was that the on-ice drama was so disappointing that night, and we'll bring Batch in, but the on-ice result, the energy in the game was kind of low. Like, mm-hmm. It felt like a low-energy game, and yet on Canucks Twitter, in terms of the speculation, like, things had gotten so spicy, and I was just thinking to myself, and actually, me and Batch texted about it post-game as we bring him on, and I know you've got a read to do, so I'll kick it back to you, but I was just texting him.
We're still trying to get on the line anyway, so
okay,
don't worry.
Good.
Just rag the puck. It's
perfect.
Fine.
I texted him, and I was just like, how good do we have it, Batch? Because there was so much hilarity.
I gotta say, honestly, this might be the week I've enjoyed most doing the show.
Yeah!
It's been so fun.
Jason Bruff deleted tweets, like everything, just so good. It was so funny this week.
The poll question from Donnie and Dolly, the crossover yesterday was great.
Dolly Wall lobbying slanderous burner accusations.
Yeah,
Incredible stuff.
I'm having a blast. And if it ends with like a presser announcing a deal tomorrow, that's the perfect cherry on top to a hilarious and entertaining and fun week.
Feels like a bit of an accelerated timeline, that, Jamie.
I know, I'm just throwing it out
there. I wouldn't hold my breath if I were you.
I won't. No. I mean, as I said before, like, this is a really tricky one to navigate, because typically you see that the tweet from Frank Saravalli last night, and they're very careful. Like, insiders are really smart. They're careful about how they word things. So he's not saying a deal is done. But you see that tweet, and you just kind of mentally compute it to, oh, this is 100% going to get done, right? Like, that's almost always what it means. I'm sure maybe there's a prominent example where you get a report like that and it doesn't happen. But typically, you just kind of, you jump to the next step. You're like, okay, it's going to get done. My only hesitation is that, as we talked about, like, this has just unfolded in a really strange way. It has not unfolded in kind of according to your normal fact pattern for a star pending restricted free agent. Up to, as you said, like, typically the trade deadline is not really a big pressure point for a player like this, right? Like, the I'm not going to talk, but his agent saying, well, maybe he will talk, to, you know, reports of, hey, there's a lot of positive momentum on it in November, then that completely dies down, and no, they're not talking at all. It's been so atypical. As you said, there's been such a kind of void of information from Pettersson himself, which is totally fair. That's his prerogative. That I am not ready to go in 100% to this is going to get done for sure yet, right? But just because who knows if there's more curveballs that we're going to see here.
The more honest you've been about your lack of understanding and lack of certainty around this situation, the better your analysis. Just like, as a general rule, I see no reason to abandon that stance now. Still can't get the Bad Batch?
Okay. No, we got Batch on the line. Never mind. All right. Anyways.
Let's give a rose to our friend, the Bachelor.
I'll tell you more about that in the break, Drantz. But anyways, now we go to the Dispatch Plumbing and Heating and Air Conditioning Hotline, where we are joined by Brendan Batchelor. Batch, how's it going, man?
I'm good. What happened there?
Yeah, please.
I don't know if I want to burn you here, but I asked if a certain player was in attendance at Morning Skate. I asked our producer Elon to ask you, and you said I didn't look at the ice, according to Elon.
Well, no, what I said was I took a cursory glance at the ice.
All right.
When I arrived, and there were five skaters and two goalies,
so I did not
pay close attention to which five players. And obviously the two goalies, you can,
yes,
by process of elimination, figure out who they were. But so I don't think Pettersson was on the ice this morning, but I cannot 100%.
Because I was going to, sorry,
confidently
process,
say that he wasn't.
Process of elimination. Who are you eliminating?
The practice goalie, Roman Bazrin.
Okay.
Because he was there yesterday, right?
Got it. Okay.
Because I was going to ask you if Pettersson looked today like somebody about to sign a $100 million contract. But we'll have to wait. We'll have to wait until the game tonight to see if he looks like
they
that.
They set a table up at the optional skate mid-ice. Get his autograph.
Get it done. But, okay, look, you're operating with the same information as us on Pettersson, so we won't dwell on that too much. Although, I guess, you know, what was your reaction to what Rick Tocchet had to say in his commentary about Elias Pettersson's game and, you know, the whole discussion around Pettersson after practice yesterday?
Oh, I think, you know, in the short term or the recent past, shall we say, Tocchet's analysis is correct. Pettersson hasn't been at his best in recent weeks, neither has the team. He does need to drive play more. I think that's a fair criticism of the way he's been playing lately. But I think too often in this market, we get hyper-focused on sort of the short term and guy has a bad game or guy has a bad week. And we lose the perspective of the fact that this is a guy that's going to post back-to-back 100-point seasons. And so, you know, while Pettersson's play has been up and down at times this year, this is still an elite forward that the club would be lucky to sign to an 8-year extension, regardless of what the dollar amount is, in my opinion. So the news that it's trending in that direction is a welcome for this organization. And I know there are always people that are going to put Pettersson under the microscope. And, you know, I heard you guys talking about it earlier. I think, in fact, Drancer, rather than the heat being off Pettersson once he signs the contract, I think it might get ratcheted up even more because now he's actually making that big dollar amount that, you know, starts with a 12 per season or whatever it might be. Like the pressure and the focus and the scrutiny might be even that much more intense on him. But he is a guy that has delivered throughout his career as a Canuck, and there's no reason to believe that he won't continue to do that going forward, assuming he does sign an 8-year extension and stays here long term.
See, my take is that an $87.5 million cap upper limit's going to quickly like get a bunch of other guys, whether it's like Nylander at 11.5. Like a bunch of guys are going to hit that range, which is going to change the conversation. Like the day he signs it, people will be like, well, that's almost Austin Matthews money, and that'll change the conversation for a minute. By the time he's actually playing under the contract, I feel like it's already going to be like, hey, that contract's going to age really well. And instead, we're going to start doing this. Hey, Brock Besser, extension eligible on July 1st. What's going on there? And then, Batch, don't
it's
ignore.
It's never ending, right?
Yeah, don't ignore this one. Don't ignore Quinn Hughes. Does he want to play with his brothers?
Thatcher Demko next year. Is Shelov's ready to take over the reins?
It's the conveyor belt, baby. It never ends.
It's Vancouver. That's what you'd expect, but you know, that's what happens when, you know, you build a good team and you have good players. You know, there are sometimes tough choices to be made. And in a salary cap world, you can't just throw, you know, huge money at every single one of them. So Miller's signed long term. We're now expecting Pettersson to be signed long term. And once we move on from that, you're right, there will be focus on other players. I mean, in the immediate short term, it's going to be okay. Now, can they get Hronek done before the deadline so they have true cost certainty on any players they might want to bring in and keep around prior to March 8th, assuming that they get Pettersson done in the next few days as well. So I understand that there's always going to be focus, but Pettersson in particular, I think because his play has been up and down at times throughout his career here. And again, I'm not taking anything away from him. I think he's a tremendous hockey player that, as I said, they would be lucky and fortunate to be able to keep for 8 more years here in Vancouver. But he did have that stretch a couple of years ago where, you know, his game was down to start the year. And for whatever reason, he's always been a polarizing player in this market. So I don't expect that to change regardless of the long-term contract commitment or not.
Batch, a little bit of a shakeup on the blue line yesterday. What did you make of Quinn Hughes and Filip Hronek potentially being split up? I mean, we'll see if it carries over to the game tonight, but what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think we'll probably see it carry over to the game tonight, at least in some form or fashion. But all of that said, Quinn Hughes and Filip Hronek are still going to get shifts together on a nightly basis, especially at important moments in the game, whether you're trailing and need a goal or, you know, looking to protect a lead. That pairing has been so good for you this year that, you know, you're still going to go to it situationally, regardless of what it looks like the rest of the way, just because you're not going to play Noah Juulsen the same amount of minutes that you're going to play Quinn Hughes. Like, we know that. That's, you know, something that we've seen throughout the year. But what I do think it shows is that they are trying to see if Hronek can carry his own pair, if, you know, keeping them apart can help spread things out on the back end so that you're not putting all your eggs in the one pairing basket. And let's be perfectly honest, with where they're sitting in the standings, this is the time of year to do that. You know, prior to the trade deadline, prior to the real intense stretch run. I know the team hasn't been, you know, playing as well in recent weeks, but if you're shaking things up like you are on the power play, you might as well shake them up a bit at even strength and see if something sticks, or you find something that you maybe didn't expect that could be more sustainable going down the stretch and into the playoffs. So I don't have a problem with it. I'm going to be interested to see how Hronek fares, if indeed he does play more of his minutes away from Hughes than with him tonight. And, you know, I do think that's something that is important for this organization, you know, not just in the short term in terms of winning games this year and having as much success as possible, but since we're talking about signing guys to long-term extensions, guess what? Filip Hronek is one of those guys that will be looking at an extension here relatively soon. And I think you probably want to know if he's a guy that you need to play with Quinn Hughes in order for him to have the level of success that you want, or whether he can still provide the level of play that he has this year on another pairing.
Do you, by any chance, associate this shift on the defense pairs with how the club fared handling the Penguins' forecheck on Tuesday?
Yeah, I think that's a part of it. And I think at the very least, it's Tocchet sending a message to the group of defenders that, you know, they've got to pick their game up as well, much like he's spoken about, you know, the puck management and the turnovers. Like, that's not all the forwards, or it wasn't just Teddy Bluger on that one really egregious turnover. Like, the puck management against the Penguins the other night was not where you'd want it to be throughout the roster. So, yeah, I would imagine that that's part of it, saying, look, the way you guys performed the other night wasn't good enough, and we need to get back to being the kind of team that, you know, first of all, we hear coaches always talk about how all the parts of the game are interconnected. And I think, you know, never more so was that an example against the Penguins the other night, where if you don't establish your forecheck, then they can transition the puck the other way more effectively. If your neutral zone play isn't good, then they can, you know, create more off the rush, or they can dump pucks in and dictate play with their forecheck, and you're the team on your heels that's having to go back for pucks all the time. And we hear Rick Tocchet talk so much about skating forward and meeting pressure with pressure, and that was not one of those nights for the Canucks blue line. So I would imagine that there is a connection to him tweaking the defensive pairings for the first time in a while, based on the way the team has played in recent games, and in particular against the Penguins on Tuesday.
What are you seeing from Elias Lindholm through 12 games?
Yeah, he's been up and down. Like, I didn't see a lot from him against the Penguins
The
other night, and the offensive production has been okay. I think he's got 4 goals, and they've both been in multi-goal games. So he's only got goals in 2 of his games as a Canuck, if I'm not mistaken. I like the face-off ability, right? He's been very good in the circle. You know, you can appreciate the two-way ability he has, the penalty-killing ability that he has, but it hasn't been consistent enough. It hasn't been to the level that I'm sure the Canucks would have hoped, or that the coaching staff would expect from a player like Elias Lindholm. And to a certain extent, you can say, you know, joining a new team, getting his feet under him, all of those things I think are fair. So I'm not going to grade him too harshly on his performance thus far. But especially if they are going to stick with playing Pettersson, Miller, and Lindholm on different lines down the middle, he at the very least needs to be a very reliable two-way player that could be used in a matchup role, if not more than that, in terms of trying to get some bottom line production out of him as well. And to this point, I haven't necessarily seen that to the level that you would have hoped to see it when you acquired him, but I'm still very cognizant of the fact that there's still lots of time. There's 20 plus games yet left for him to figure that out. But that said, and this is something that Tocchet is starting to emphasize here as well, 20 plus games left is fine, but with every passing game, you're getting closer and closer to the playoffs. And with every passing game, if you don't figure things out, then it becomes more and more concerning. And that's something that applies to the overall team play of late. And it certainly applies to Elias Lindholm and his individual game, too.
So with the news that Chris Tanev was traded to Dallas last night in mind, you know, that's one potential Canucks trade target off the board. Now, of course, they've already made the Elias Lindholm deal, but we've also heard that they're still, you know, scouring the trade market looking for other options. What's the one spot on the roster you would prioritize ahead of the March 8th trade deadline?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's a situation where I would have, and I think I did say a few weeks ago that I would be looking at defensive depth and you know, trying to shore up the blue line so that if you have a couple of injuries, you've got some guys that can come in and play NHL minutes for you. And make no mistake about it, I still think defensive depth is important, and I still think it's something that they should address. But with the developments of all those centers playing on different lines, as I alluded to, I think you need winger help. I think you need guys on the wing that can come and help solidify all three of those Pettersson, Miller, and Lindholm lines, because amazingly, although we've talked about the depth of wingers that this organization has had over the last few years, they don't have enough guys right now that can help in a top nine role, I guess it's fair to say. And Dakota Joshua coming back sort of changes the math on that a little bit, but I still think I'd like another winger. You know, we're expecting Phil Kessel at some point here, I guess. So maybe that's the winger move. Maybe there's another acquisition you can make. Maybe you're looking at Jake Guentzel if the stars align and you can figure it out cap wise. Then that would certainly be beneficial. But that's where I'm looking right now, is saying, okay, if we're assuming that Lindholm's not going to be a winger, or he's not going to bump Pettersson or Miller to the wing, then you need more wing help to try and make sure that you've got some good depth in terms of trusting the guys in matchup roles in your top nine forward group.
Batch, the winger play in general, you know, has been interesting. What center do you think needs the most help right now? You know, like, who do you think could use an upgrade the most sorely, assuming the club, as Talk it said they would, play the same lineup tonight as they used on Tuesday?
Probably Pettersson, because Lindholm has Garland, and, you know, I don't think Tuesday was Garland's best game of the year, but for the most part, Garland has been one of the Canucks' most consistent players this year. We've talked about how, you know, he's helped drive play on that line with Bluger and Joshua when they've all been healthy and in the lineup. So, you know, if we're assuming that the lineup, or at least the way the lines are deployed, looks the same, and I don't know if we should necessarily expect that, although we did see that yesterday at practice. Tockett just committed to the same players being in the lineup, so we'll see what happens in warm-up and going into the game. But if I'm looking at, and coaches often look at it as duos on lines, right? So I could see, you know, Lindholm and Garland is a duo. Certainly Miller and Besser are a duo. And I think Pettersson and Hoglander are on their way to being a duo potentially. But, you know, much like we were talking about this when Kuzmenko was on that line and struggling, you know, Hoglander and Mikheyev, both of them haven't been the most consistent of the Canucks wingers this year. Although I think Hoglander in particular has come a long way in that regard. And I think Mikheyev's game has started to trend in the right direction a little bit of late. But if I'm looking at those three lines, I think it's probably Pettersson that, in a perfect world where you are going and getting a Jake Guentzel or similar to be a top six winger and to help solidify things down the walls, I'm taking that player, whether it's Jake Guentzel or someone else, and I'm putting them on Pettersson's line right away.
Demko starting again tonight, Talk It. That's five in a row, and I'll have to double check it, but I believe that's the first time that's happened all season. Seems like the club is riding Demko more, even more voraciously as the season goes along. What do you think's behind that overall? Is it related to DeSmith's form of late?
I think it might be more related to the team's form of late and the feeling that with them playing the way that they are, they might need Demko right now. Tockett continues to reiterate that they have a plan and they're going to get DeSmith in there. And he even sort of hinted today that it might be within the next couple of games. But that said, we know that coaches are always tempted to give their team the best chance to win on a night-to-night basis. And this is a club that does not have any back-to-backs, if I'm not mistaken, for the next month.
Yeah.
Like, they're going on this three-game road trip after the game tonight. No back-to-backs on the road trip. Then they've got nine straight games at home spread out over the rest of March. They've only got 12 games in the month of March, I believe, off the top of my head, which is a much lighter schedule than some of the teams around them. And the fact that they have no back-to-backs means that the temptation or the opportunity is there to continue riding Demko, because there are no games where you're forced to put DeSmith in, essentially, because you're playing on consecutive days. Now, they're going to need to find games for DeSmith. They cannot continue to ride Demko at the rate that they have, especially when they do have some breathing room atop the standings, albeit not a huge amount, but it's not like they're in a must-win every night kind of situation like some of the teams they've been facing recently are. So I'll be interested to see how many games DeSmith gets in March in particular, because realistically, they don't have to play him in any of them. And there are multiple situations where they've got multiple days between games. And Tockett even sort of talked about the fact that Demko didn't practice yesterday. They had Roman Bazarin out there as the practice goalie, and he just did a little bit of work, did Demko with Ian Clark before practice, and then went off and didn't participate. So there is the opportunity to get him rest that way as well. But I think there probably isn't a coincidence that we've seen Demko's numbers start to tick in the wrong direction in recent weeks too. And we know from looking at other situations how detrimental it can be to teams to overplay your goaltender once you get to the playoffs, if a guy's already got a lot of miles on him from the regular season. So it's going to be fascinating to see how they manage it, but I would hope anyway that DeSmith gets in there sooner rather than later. And I don't know, what do we say, like three games out of 12 in March? Like, is that what you'd be looking at? Do you need to get in more than that? They do have some tough teams coming to town, like Tockett alluded to it today, Vegas, LA a bunch of times, Colorado, Winnipeg. Like, yep. It's not like they've got a bunch of cellar dwellers or easy outs, even though the schedule is favorable to them in terms of lack of travel and the way the games are spaced. They're not easy games by any means. So, I'm sure it's a battle that they're having internally as well, where they want to get Demko some rest. But at the same time, a coach always wants to give his team the best chance to win. And, regardless of how well DeSmith has played at times this year, although I agree, I think his form of late hasn't been as good as it was earlier in the season. Coaches always have a tough time sort of fighting that temptation to go with their starter on a night-to-night basis. And we'll see whether Rick Tockett really can sort of carve out opportunities for DeSmith to get into the lineup without costing this team points.
Batch, thank you as always, man. We appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
This was the most normal hit I've done with you guys in months. So I appreciate it. Thanks.
You're welcome for that. That is Brendan Batchelor, play-by-play voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650. We got to take a break. We will be back. Very excited to chat with our next guest, Daniel G, who covers Canucks prospects for Elite Prospects, EP Ringside, and the Daily Hive here in Vancouver as well. Great article this week about Vasily Podkolzin. So we'll talk to Daniel about Podkolzin, the latest on Lekkerä Mäki, who continues to turn heads in Sweden as well. That's next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650, Jamie Dodd, Thomas Strance. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, What are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And we now go to the Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning hotline, where we are joined by our next guest. He is Daniel G, covering Canucks prospects for Elite Prospects and also Daily High. Very pleased to have him on the show for the first time. Daniel, thanks for doing this. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing really well. And you wrote a really excellent piece for Offside at Daily Hive this week, doing kind of a deep dive into the game of FacilityPod Colson and how it's developed over this year playing in Abbotsford. And, you know, we'll go through it here a little bit, but I just wanted to start by asking, like, from a scouting perspective, because we could all look at it and say, hey, he needed to rebuild his confidence. But from a scouting perspective, what were the key things that FacilityPod Colson needed to, you know, quote unquote, fix spending this year at Abbotsford?
Well, you know, you mentioned confidence, and he was overthinking pretty much every play at the NHL level. We saw that. It's an awful viewing experience. It's awful for the player. But from a scouting perspective, he really needed just to play a more direct game. He needed to simplify. He needed to find a scoring touchdown in Abbotsford.
And in terms of finding that scoring touch, Daniel, how's he gone about doing so? Like, where's he scoring goals from? What are you seeing in terms of a more instinctive game from him that's sort of manifesting itself in terms of his production?
So, essentially, he's showing a lot more pass support habits, like in terms of finding open areas in the ice, timing his activations into soft areas of the ice, really supporting his puck, his puck carrier. On top of that, you know, the Abbotsford's leveraging him on the power play off the right-hand circle, you know, using the power of his shot and all that kind of stuff. But overall, you know, the biggest thing is the pass support habits. He's taking pucks directly to the net with a power game, leveraging a lot of the hard skills that, you know, he's kind of been known for in the past.
Yeah, those hard skills is a really good way to put it, because I know one of the struggles for young players can be just kind of finding their identity. What's their role going to be? What's their style of play going to be? How would you characterize the identity of Pod Colson's game right now?
Well, his identity is he's a high motor player, which means that he's going to be constantly moving his feet. He's going to be crashing on the forecheck, crashing on the boards. He's going to be the first one back on the back check, driving people towards the walls. And then occasionally you're going to get those flashes of brilliance. He's going to label a shot top shelf. He's going to have a really creative playmaking idea, and he's going to execute through it. I think, like, the biggest thing is that maybe we overestimated, like, what he is as a player in general. And if he is just a middle six contributor who, you know, plays hard every shift, has a defensive profile, and can contribute some goals, I think that's pretty good for Pod Colson right now going forward.
In terms of his overall production profile, you know, given his age, right, given the fact that he's not quite point per game in the American League, you like what you've seen in terms of his progress, but is this still a player who we can look at as having top six upside, or should we be lowering our expectations at all for what his ceiling is at the NHL level?
Yeah, the numbers aren't great, to be frank. Like, this is a player that has legitimate NHL experience. He produced in the KHL, and to go back to the AHL and, you know, produce at a 0.65 points per game, it's not ideal. Mm-hmm. But, you know, digging into his numbers, you see, we mentioned before a lot of the off puck habits and him getting into tight areas and getting those high danger shots right in the crease. He doesn't convert many of them, and that's a big issue. So he has the sense to get in those positions to support the puck carrier, but he's labeling pucks into the crest of goaltenders. He's shooting high. It's not a bad problem to have. Don't get me wrong. You want a player to be really intelligent off puck, but he has to find his finishing at some level. Currently shooting at around 9%, and I think his career across all hockey is around 11%. So there could be some upwards regression coming for him. But I think in terms of his overall projection as a player, I think it's safer to label him more of a middle six contributor. There is some caveats with that, because he does have tools. He is a smart player. He can add to his game over time. But I think he's more of a guy that's going to provide cheap depth for them down the road when a lot of their, you know, their depth this year are going to price themselves off the team.
Tell us about his defensive game right now in Abbotsford.
Yeah, his defensive game's ridiculous. So a high motor player is going to be a really good pressure pusher. So he's forcing defenders on the blue line to make really poor passes just by kind of sprinting at them at full speed. Where he really contributes, though, is on the back check. He's not a mechanically refined skater, but he just ups his frequency so much that he's able to catch puck carriers, and he's just driving a ton of opposing forwards to the sideboards and just killing rushes in general. There's an element of sense there too, because he's predicting the routes that that opposing puck carriers are taking and activating into them to strip pucks and clamp pucks away. It's actually it's really nuanced, actually. And it's something that I think he can push to the NHL level. Now, he doesn't do a lot of penalty killing. Like, I think like a shift here or there every like 4 or 5 games, but it's something that when you look at his profile, you wonder if that should be like a next step in his development, is, you know, making him more utility penalty kill type of a player.
You know, you mentioned there that the defensive results, the defensive effort and intelligence is something that should translate to the NHL level. Looking at his game as a whole, what do you see now that will kind of translate day one when he eventually does get back to the NHL? And what are those key areas of improvement that he's going to have to keep working on to stick at the NHL level?
So the way that like the whole Canucks organization works is like they play a similar system down in Abbotsford. And right away, this is a player that's going to be able to forecheck, dislodge pucks, and play that dump and chase system that Rick Tocchet likes to employ. When you're looking at a player that's essentially going to be winning second chance pucks and creating second chance offense and cycle plays, when he gets to the NHL level, it's going to be about him playing direct like he is at the AHL level and not overcomplicating plays. Like, this is a guy that's shooting upwards of 10 to 12 times in some games at the AHL level. He averages around 4 shots per game, but this is a guy that's attempting a lot of shots. And that's a great thing, because when you go back to his NHL tape, this is a guy that was passing pucks right out of the prime scoring opportunities. So in general, I think when he gets that, I think he can be a contributor right away. He's probably a better option than removing cap space and all that type of things. He probably is a stronger contributor in the bottom six than some of the guys they have right now. But when he does reach the NHL, you're going to see a player that's going to be working really hard, essentially, with a few flashes of brilliance here and there.
Daniel, I also wanted to ask you, ask you about Jonathan Lekkerimäki in Sweden. And then he goes and scores the Michigan, the lacrosse goal, in his game today. So our text block is buzzing, asking us to talk about it and mention it. I mean, it's a fantastic skill play. He's been on a heater anyways. Like, what makes him such a dangerous scorer when he's clicking like this?
Well, Lekkerimäki's shot has kind of transcended like the level of the Swedish Hockey League right now. His release is like, it's frankly one of the top in the world. And part of it is that it's just so deceptive. He has very little, he doesn't really drag the puck back very much, and he just rockets it off the stick. Like, he's one of those new age players that really leverages the technology of his stick well. And then he adds other stuff to it. Like, he changes the angle of the shot and has goalies looking over the wrong shoulder. Not only that, he can score in different ways. Like, he can snipe a puck from distance. He can one time a puck. He can lacrosse a puck into the net. Like, this is a guy that is uber skilled. And you know, it's translating at least at the SHL level. He's a lot more of an inside player now than he was in the past. And part of that, I think, is due to him just getting healthy and not being sick and having a full off season to train. But overall, he looks like a really dangerous player who potentially down the line could be a replacement for, you know, one of the goal scorers on the team if they leave.
Daniel, just want to ask you about Tom Volander. You've watched him closely over the course of this season. Tools are there. Head for the defensive game seems to be there. Not a ton of dynamic puck talent, which has sort of shown and really been something that the Canucks themselves and BU coaches have commented on. What are you seeing there? How would you describe his season on the whole, his progression on the whole?
Yeah, it's a tough jump going from like the junior 20 national level to the NCAA. Like, you're operating on a different size rink, although, you know, the NCAA is a little wider than the NHL size. This is a guy that's really, really simple in the offensive zone right now, not leveraging his feet enough. One of the hallmarks of his game, you know, at every level has been his activation, and that just really wasn't present at the start of the season. We're starting to see a lot more of that, and I know the player is he's pretty dedicated to improving the offensive side, but you also have to, you know, take in context his role on that team right now. They have Lane Hutson, who is a dynamic offensive threat, probably one of the best NCAA players this year and in recent years, who kind of eats up a lot of leveraged power play time and leveraged offensive zone time. And even when Will Anders pegged the play with Lane Hutson, he's more of a supporter because Lane Hutson is going to be activating and doing all that type of good stuff.
Daniel, really appreciate the time again. Great work on the Pod Colson deep dive and just in general covering Canucks prospects. Thanks for doing this, and hopefully we can chat again soon.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
That is Daniel G. You can follow him on Twitter at Daniel G Scouting. Read his work at Elite Prospects, and also, as I mentioned, the latest on Vasily Podkolzin up at the Daily Hive right now.
And do so. Extremely perceptive analyst.
Yeah, lots of great tape in there. Lots of great kind of nitty-gritty technical analysis.
Awesome to have him join
us these
today.
Guys are doing. So really pleased to bring Daniel G on to the show. And as I said, hopefully we'll do it again sometime soon. Also, yeah, I'm starting to feel the hype on Lekkerimäki, I got to admit. Some of the goals that he's scoring, it's like, oh boy, that is really, really sick.
You know, the Michigan is amazing. The Michigan goal, go find it on Twitter, highlights on Twitter.
What the Michigan says to me more than anything is his confidence is sky high.
Well,
right
and it should be. He scored an 8 straight. And it was his second goal of the day. And what's cool about it is the puck's rimming around the net. He's behind the net when he gathers it. This is not like guy skates around net and uses momentum. It's just like he's at the side of the net and he's like, yeah, I'll try it.
Yeah,
I'll try it. It's cool, but I'll be honest with you. The first goal he scored of the day is better. It's better. It's a sicker goal. I mean,
what was the one he scored the first one? Because I'm seeing clips and I'm getting them mixed up. Because there's the one where I think it was from yesterday, where he changes the angle. It was on the power play.
Was that yesterday?
I think that was yesterday. And the goalie just has like no chance. But it's a angle change wrist shot on the power play over the goalie's right shoulder. Is that the one you're thinking of? Like,
yeah.
As I describe it? Yeah. Because that one was just preposterous. That's the one that got me excited. It was like, oh, that shot could be a really legitimate weapon.
Okay, yeah, you're right. That was yesterday. Excuse me.
No.
My bad. Yeah, that is a sick, sick shot.
Yeah.
Anyway, Lekkerimäki is now moving pretty quickly into the top 10 all-time teenage scorers in the SHL. That's a list that'll also include names like Elias Pettersson, Marcus Naslund, Daniel Sedin.
Mm-hmm.
A who's who of Canucks greats. Now, it'll also include names like Emil Bemström, who we saw play on the power play for the Pittsburgh Penguins following his acquisition for Alex Nylander, which tells you a lot about how Emil Bemström has developed at the NHL level. And one reason that Lekkerimäki still has more in common with Bemström than he does with the Canucks greats of years past is the low assist totals, right? His goal totals are eye-popping, especially for a teenager in that league. That's a massively rare skill. But the dual threat attacking stuff in his game is still work in progress. Like, that's going to be the area that he's going to need to flesh out to be, you know, I'm trying to like think of the example, but more than a Cy Young winner, you know what I mean? And the key here is there is a certain player type. Here's an example. I was trying to think of an NHL player who matches this. The difference between Andreas Athanasiou,
mm-hmm.
right, who is a guy who gets his, like Andreas Athanasiou, I know he's played for Chicago, he's had some injury trouble, so he's kind of out of sight, out of mind, but this is a guy who scored 30 goals in the NHL. He's had 54 point seasons, multiple 20 goal seasons, been on pace for 25 per 80. Like, his career scoring rate suggests that he's like a 25 goal true talent guy, but because he's like a somewhat limited rush scorer, he gets his teams don't necessarily score more when he's on the ice than they would otherwise. And that's an important distinction, right? If the Canucks get an Andreas Athanasiou quality player out of Lekkerimäki, especially for 3 years on an ELC over the next little bit, that's going to be massive, right? There's no sniffing at that. But to be more than that, like, middle six offensive spark plug guy, to be a star level player, I still think there's going to be some work rounding out his offensive game when he arrives in Abbotsford. Canucks remain very eager to bring him over. I think he's going to play American League hockey as soon as his SHL season ends. I think the club's really excited about bringing both him and Elias Pettersson, the defenseman, over. I think they'll be in Abbotsford for that playoff run. So it's going to be interesting to see what work the club does in trying to sort of flesh out his offensive game. There's no question, though, this guy's got a nose for the net, a high end, like an elite shot, and absolutely no fear about using it.
If we're talking Cy Young Award winners and we're also looking for Canucks tie-ins, how about Michael Grabner?
Right.
175 career goals, 101 career assists for Michael Grabner.
And
including a 25-6 season.
Grabner's a perfect example, too, because it took him a long time to mature in the league, right? That's a major reason why the Canucks deemed him to be dispensable when they did. I mean, put it this way, it's not like a coincidence that as the club got serious about their Stanley Cup chances in the summer of 2010, they moved on from like Grabner and Shane O'Brien and stuff, right? Like, they wanted more serious personalities to help elevate that team. Grabner, of course, gets waived.
Gets picked up, scores 34 goals.
And in particular, as Grabner matured, he figured out one area of the game in particular to become an absolute ace, which was killing penalties. Like, drafted to be this offensive spark plug, he went to the Calder Cup final on this loaded Manitoba Moose team. It was like Hodgson, Grabner, top line with Corey Schneider and net. And every time Hodgson and Grabner were on the ice together, the ice tilted massively in Manitoba's favor, right? But Grabner was supposed to be this, like, high-end offensive guy and instead sort of became this, like, again, spark plug depth goal scorer who was an elite penalty killer. You know, like, that's sort of the path you have to take.
And that's how you get to 640 career games, right?
Yeah, and you know, I mean, you hope that a player type like Lekkerimäki can take an Owen Tippett-type route to being just this, like, rush game-breaker for the Vancouver Canucks, but you know, I do think it's worth noting that as you move up various levels, right, your path to actually sticking and being successful in the NHL might be different than you imagine it at the moment.
Yeah, you got to learn those other things, right? You got to find those other things that keep you in the lineup.
Unless that shot just plays. Like, if that shot just plays, then that's one thing.
Well, it looks like bare minimum, and there's a power play weapon there, right? If you can shoot it like that, it's like you're going to have a chance to figure in on the power play, and that's one special team taken care of. As we talk about what roles can you find, what roles can you develop to stand in the lineup, like that's one right there. Then that's a place to at least build off of as you try to figure out the other parts of the game.
Well, it is, but if your playmaking's only at a certain level, you know, and if you're, I mean, he's a righty. That's the one edge that he has is he's a righty, so maybe that helps him get in the lineup. On the power play, even if, you know, a sort of shot antidote to what Elias Pettersson does on the other side. So anyway, you're right. The power play will help him get minutes. I do think he's going to spend some time in Abbotsford. And to be that top line player, to really deliver on this potential, I do still think you're going to want to see more of a dual threat option. But man, that skill set is sick. And he has popped in a major way after, you know, a real outlier second season was waylaid by all manner of injuries.
Yeah, it was tough and great to see him. And I am enjoying the now daily sick Jonathan Lekkerimäki highlights that we're getting from his games in Sweden. All right, we're going to take a little bit of an earlier break than normal here. We have some Rick Tocchet audio to play on the other side. It is, of course, a Canucks game day. They're taking on the LA Kings tonight at Rogers Arena, so we can dive into that a little bit more as well. And we also have a chance to dive back into the inbox. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and digest the reports about Elias Pettersson and the Canucks talking contract. Your reaction hearing that they're making progress, according to Frank Saravelli, on a potential 8-year deal. Send it in, 650-650. We'll be back for the final segment here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz on a Canucks game day live from the Kintec studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. By the way, in our previous segment, when we were talking Vasily Podkolzin with Daniel G, that was part of our Abbey Farm Report, a presentation of David L. Young of Dexter Realty. Here, there, everywhere. Visit homes by davidlyoung.com. Join Cobb's Bread on March 2nd for Donation Day. Get it? Donation, where $2 from every six-pack of hot cross buns sold is donated to a local charity in your community. Our target is to donate over $500,000 to over 100 charities across Canada. Hot cross buns at Cobb's come in three flavors: traditional fruit, apple cinnamon, and cranberry orange. Cobb's Bread bakes fresh in-house all day, every day. And when the doors close, all leftover baked goods are donated to local charities. The next morning, they start fresh. Again, that's Donation Day on March 2nd, Friday this week. $2 from every six-pack of hot cross buns sold goes to a local charity in our community. Get a review? You just finished one?
Yeah, this is good.
All right, there you go. Drancer just polished one off, and he can vouch for
them. Speaking for donation.
Yes.
Which truly is, feels like a appointed personal moniker. Very good.
All right. Let's hear from... Okay, you got something?
I want to talk about a certain Canucks centerman.
Is it Elias Pettersson?
It's not.
Oh, wow. All right.
It's JT Miller. I want to talk about JT. I thought we had a pretty good segment talking about Miller, Pettersson.
Yep.
Yesterday.
I think my don't get so twisted that you start to hate everything Elias Pettersson does take has aged really well. Because you might be watching him for a while.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
So Miller's on an unholy tear since the All-Star break. We all know this.
By the way, hold on. I have to do our partners at Cobbs. I said March 2nd was Friday. March 2nd is Saturday.
That's okay.
Sorry.
That's so, okay, man. Leap year.
The leap year screwed me up.
Yeah.
It's March 2nd, which is Saturday.
And
is
this
the
is why you'll
day.
Be a Pirate's apprentice for the rest of your life.
Yes.
What?
I don't know that reference.
You're not a Gilbert and Sullivan
guy?
No,
I'm not.
Wow. Even though you are the very model of a
yes,
modern
that's me.
Major podcast host.
Anyways, JT Miller.
Unholy tear!
Let's move on from this. Yeah, he's playing amazing.
Now, it's an interesting thing because it's the big goals, the big moments that I think are capturing people's attention here, right? Like, when this team needs a goal right now, it's JT Miller who's getting it. And yet, when I think about this 12 games that he's played, the run of production, obviously good, don't get me wrong, but a little bit inflated by some ephemeral stuff that's unlikely to last.
Mm-hmm.
What I think we're losing, or what I don't want to lose in this conversation, right, is that what's made Miller's last run of games, the 12 games since the All-Star break, so impressive, so massively beastly for Vancouver's top centerman at the moment, is not the production. It's part of it, but it's the level that he's hit defensively at center, right? So he started the season great at center. There was a bit of a lull in terms of his overall two-way game. And now it's back to being at a high level. It was also at a really high level once Rick Tocchet took over in those 36 games down the stretch. So we're getting to a point here where we're going to approach like a full season, a full 82 games, in which Miller's been like a stud two-way center for 60 games and sort of had like a 22-ish, like a short lull that I don't think we worry about too much. And we're getting to a point here where, man have, and certainly I had them, man have the, I'm not sure about this guy at center takes. He's really put those to bed, like in a major way. And as his dominance in the circle, the way that he's closing games when the Canucks lead, as that stuff piles up and as he hits this level, Even in contrast with earlier in the season, because Vancouver's top six wasn't reliably driving play, even though his defensive game looked improved, this month, his defensive game's been at the highest level that it's been. Like, his ability to dictate play has been at the highest level that it's been in a long, long time. And it's been less dependent of late on the minutes that he's spending right. with Quinn Hughes.
And I think it's really telling, to the point about his defense, that, and I know you brought this up after the Pittsburgh game, that he was in the matchup role against Sidney Crosby. He was taking all those big draws, despite the presence of Elias Lindholm in the lineup. Because say whatever you want about Lindholm's offensive spark that he has not really brought to the team, Tockett has raved about his defense, right? And so I think I think you can read it as maybe a little disappointment or uncertainty with Lindholm, but I think you also have to read it as, you know, Tockett values Lindholm's defense a lot, and he's still choosing Miller as the matchup guy over it.
Yeah, I mean, if Lindholm doesn't start to draw more of those assignments and earn easier sledding for JT Miller, I do think, as the sample expands, we're going to start to talk about Lindholm in a different way than I think we should be prepared to yet. I still think some grace period is called for after the acquisition. But yeah, I mean, I don't want to see him logging the eighth most minutes among Canucks forwards on a regular basis.
No.
That would be a problem.
No, but my point is, I think that happened because JT Miller has given Tockett that confidence.
Sorry.
In his
defense.
To
be clear, I get it. I'm just not willing to accept your positive spin.
Positive as it relates to JT Miller, anyways.
For sure. I mean, you know, I still think we need to understand, like, with all Vancouver players, that the test really is how they do in the non-Hughes minutes at this point. But man, Miller has been so good and so good in this specific area, right? Because the goals are what's going to capture the attention or what's going to get, you know, tongues flapping around this city. But it's the reliability. It's that two-way game that's spiked, that's like more likely to be sticky and more meaningful than, you know, 40% conversion rate on goals scored, right? Like, yeah. That's the stuff that you can't count on. But if Miller can play defense like this, can help a line drive like this. I think Suter, by the way, is a big part of this too. Like, I do think Pew Suter's brought stability to that line in a way that line hasn't necessarily had consistently all year, right? With Hoglander and different people moving in it. Like, I think Suter's found a home there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that line's been at their best, honestly, all season, over the course of the past 2 months since he joined.
Well, and I think with Miller doing what he's doing as a center, and as you said, you know, from a two-way perspective, not just the spike in goal scoring right now, but from a two-way play driving perspective, and, you know, that's not doing it with the Lotto line, right? Yeah, he still has Brock Besser, one of the team's best forwards, on his wing, but the other guy is Pew Suter. You can see how, if Pettersson gets back to that level, right, gets back to his normal level of extremely effective play driving, then, and you have Lindholm as your third line center, like, that's a really scary matchup down the middle for a lot of teams in the playoffs. Like, that's the key for me, is that with Miller doing that, not needing to be sheltered, right, not needing, oh yeah, he's a center, but we only play him in certain matchups, you have three centers you can potentially really rely on and trust in a playoff matchup, which is a huge weapon.
A theory that'll be tested tonight, given the Kings' depth down the middle. And by the way, before I'm, again, willing to, like, hammer the table and be like, damn right, Jamie, I need Lindholm to at least come out even in a matchup with Connor Garland on it. Like, you've got an unbelievable play driver on your wing. We can't see another repeat of, like, Canucks outshot 0-8 in your minutes. I really want to see a Lindholm bounce back tonight. I was a little disturbed.
He played well against Boston, though.
He did. But I was a little disturbed by that performance against, but I'm serious. Like, it was one of what that left me shaking my
head
a little
you.
Bit. It did. Cause I wasn't pounding the table for Lindholm as like a dynamic two-way driver or anything, but I've been a fan and an admirer of his game. And I think he's looked super intelligent. You're right to call out the Boston game. Like, he had some excellent, excellent shifts in that game. The Pew Suter thing, really quickly.
All right.
Before we move on, because I know you're eager to play Tockett audio.
Boy, I don't care. We got 17 minutes left of the show. Whatever.
Pew Suter with JT Miller this season, okay? We're up to 160 minutes, so not a huge sample. Canucks are plus 11.
It's pretty good.
14 goals for, 3 against in 160 minutes. That's incredible. And it's across the board. Like, with Pew Suter on the ice with JT Miller, the Canucks have outchanced their opponents 103-49, according to Natural Stat Trick. That's
a monster number.
That is a different That is a look. It's only 160 minutes. We'll see what the next 160 minutes look like. But when they're performing at that level, they're going to get another 160 minutes. I can tell you that much. If the Canucks have a line carrying play like that, then a lot of those concerns from earlier in the year, will this be sustainable with a top six that doesn't drive play? Is this lineup too dependent on what we're seeing from the bottom six? It all of those questions melt away immediately if this line can keep up even 80% of that level of play.
All right, now, I mean, you know I always have time for the Pew Suter love here on the show, so I'm glad we got that in. But now let's hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet speaking to the media earlier today.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a well, we haven't faced a few teams in our division. Yeah, it is strange, you know, and good hockey team. It's going to be a tough game for us.
And I think four games over the next 5 weeks or so against this team. What does that do as you kind of ramp up for the playoffs here?
Well, it puts you in playoff mode. There's 8 points available. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot at stake when you play your division teams. That whether you're chasing or you're trying to stay above, it doesn't really matter. It's, you know, they're 4 point games. They're important games.
Your goaltender tonight?
Demmer.
Any other changes you expect?
No. Same.
It's been about a month since the Lindholm trade happened. He's played in a few different spots. How do you feel about his fit and his play thus far with the team?
Yeah, I think there's been some really good games. There's some games where he's trying to feel his way out. I like where he's at. I like the centerman position that we have right now. And we got to give it some time. You know, it's only been a month. You know, and I think there's some stuff that he's really helped us with. And I think there's stuff that he wants to get better at. So, that's why we made the trade earlier, so to give him some time to work.
I want to ask you about the turnovers. That's been a big sticking point for you from that last game. Given your team has been much cleaner in that regard, were you surprised it came back, or does that just happen in a season?
I think it's a little surprising thing, because I think we take pride on that. I think we've gotten a little, I think I told you guys yesterday, we're getting a little bit looser, and I think when you're loose, you throw pucks in the middle. You try for plays that you usually don't. And it's coming from guys usually that have been pretty good. So that's something that we just got to clean it up. You know, that and the penalties. If both teams are playing and you're leading the turnovers and you're taking more penalties than the other team, the margin of error gets slimmer. So it's math. Like we got to get better at those two categories and get back into the way we were playing. You know, the first half of the year.
I know you're a pretty big fan of what Juleson's done the last few weeks. You've got Hughes with him tonight. Where are you with Noah's game right now, especially in his ability to handle the forecheck and get rid of the puck?
Well, I think when you talk about playing to your ability and playing simple, that he's the guy, right? You know, he blocks shots. He's one of our better penalty killers. You tell him to be in a certain spot, 9 times out of 10, he's going to be there. He's really, I think, since working with us, and especially Footy and Gaunch, he's one of those guys that really listens. And if you watch his play, it's gotten better. You know, he plays 16 minutes. I mean, he's a solid player for her. You know, very rarely his fingerprints are over the chances against. You know, he obviously has his hiccups like any player, but I think for me, he's a very reliable guy for us.
Last one for me was just Demko. He's playing again tonight.
Yeah.
You've been asked a bit about deployment and how many games he's going to wind up playing and potential fatigue. Like, the schedule sets up for you to play him a lot.
Right.
So how do you play him less and, you know, not get tempted?
Yeah, well, he's going to play here in the next couple of games for sure. And then yesterday, if you watch, we had the spare goalie, the call-up goalie, whatever the e-bug goalie or whatever they call it. We had him up. And Demmer didn't practice. He went out with Clark early. So that's how you keep the miles off of goalie, too, is let him not practice as hard and do his kind of his technical work with Clarky. It's worked in the past. But, yeah, no, we got to be conscious of how we use him for sure.
Rick, where have you seen the biggest growth in your hockey club from last year to this year? And are there any individuals that are maybe exceeding expectations?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of guys. I mean, you know, if you look at Garland, Dakota, you know, Teddy Bluger's had a good year in a sense. All those type of guys have, you know, we got a lot of guys that have 10 goals or more. So there's a lot of depth. For the first question, I think for us is not lately it's been a little bit, but it hasn't been what we want, but not duplicating mistakes. You know, if a guy makes a mistake, we'd hang tough. You know, I think for the most part, we've been really consistent with that. And I think the pride without the puck, most of the year have been, guys have really been, you know, good defensively, good without, and be conscious of it. It's, well, those two, now saying that, those two have slipped a little bit, those two categories. But for them, I got to be, you know, for the most part, pretty proud of the team, how they have done consistently in those categories.
We saw Susie on the ice this morning. Said he was at the doctor yesterday. Making progress? Was there an update?
So the doc will be today, and he's going to tell us about the pitchers and where he's at. But, yeah, he's fairly close, fairly close.
And just preparing for a team like this, when you haven't faced them all year, you've only watched them from afar, is there something in the game tonight that you're looking for specifically to sort of judge how you guys are managing playing an opponent that you haven't seen before?
Well, I've coached against the team for myself personally, what, 5 years with Arizona, and then a little bit last year. You know, they're, you know, whether it's Todd was a coach right now or with the new coach now, I think the pedigree of that team is a very structured team. You know, you got I'm a huge fan of Doughty and Kopitar as leaders. I think we're catching a break. I don't think Kepi's not playing that, I don't think, right? So we're catching a break. I think he's a hell of a player. But if you look at their overall structure of their game, you can't be antsy against that team. You got to be able to be if it's a 1-0 game or a 0-0 late in the second period, you got to be comfortable in your own skin because they are, you know. So I think that's really my message to the team is you got to play a smart game against them. You start pressing, you start doing turnovers, you start taking penalties, then teams like that are really good. So I think we got to make sure that if it's 0-0 after the second, we're okay. That's what we have to, that's the mentality.
Rick, you've mentioned a few times that your teams look tired, or a lot of guys have looked tired. It is the dog days. You've had a busy schedule, let's face it. You've been through it as a player. What advice or what do you want to see from your guys? How do you battle through that? Because, if you don't have the energy, it's hard to play. Right?
So, yeah, I mean, it's easy for me to say, like, mental toughness and all that sort of stuff, which comes to play. Every team goes through it. But take advantage of the rest. Like, you know, today they had the option of, you know, don't go on the ice. I think 90% of our guys didn't go on the ice. Maybe 50% will stay at home. They just come tonight. We did that the other day against Boston. It worked. I thought we had a lot of energy. So that's my job to get these guys some energy. But it's also their job to understand that if you don't have it that night, you got to play smart. You know, if your legs aren't there, then play a smarter game. Don't throw pucks away. You know, don't take stupid penalties. Just play a smart game. And I think sometimes we have to up that category when we're not feeling. You can still win games when you're tired. I don't think it's an excuse.
Your schedule is pretty good, though, down the stretch.
Well, yeah,
a lot of rest. You expect you're definitely must be expecting to see that energy come back.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's some teams got to play 17 games in the month of March. I don't know how many we're playing, but we got 9 home games at consecutive at home. Can we take advantage of it? But there's other teams got games in hand on it too, so it's give and take. But we got to use our rest days or our practice very importantly this month. So take advantage of this schedule. Yeah, we have some hard games, though. I mean, we got L.A. a bunch. We got Winnipeg. We got Vegas. Colorado again. I mean, we got some tough games. But I think that's a good thing. I'd rather go through, you know, knowing that we have to go through some tough games here with, 20 games left in the season. I think that's a good thing for our team. We need it.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet speaking about tonight's game and also looking ahead a little bit there before they play the Kings at Rogers Arena. And, yeah, they play L.A. tonight. They go on the road for 3, but as road trips go, I mean, it's Anaheim and L.A. with a day off in between, so that's nice. And then it's Vegas with, you know, no back-to-backs in there. So a pretty manageable 3-game road trip that keeps you on this side of the continent. Then they don't play on the road again until April after that, right? They've got that 9-game homestand with extra days off sprinkled in there. And, I mean, that's fascinating from a lot of perspectives, right? As you heard Tocchet speak about at the end there, hey, that gives us an opportunity to rest, gives us an opportunity to get on the practice ice. We really have to make the most of those opportunities. It's also fascinating from a goaltending usage perspective. And Tocchet was asked about that as well, because there's not going to be a lot of times. They only have one more back-to-back in April this year. So just one more back-to-back on the schedule. There's not going to be a lot of times where you think, man, this has to be a DeSmith game because Demko's worn out. The coaching staff is really going to have to aggressively look for opportunities to get DeSmith in to make sure they keep the Demko starts number down.
Yeah, so DeSmith's been an .844 save percentage goalie since the new year, right? Which seems unfortunate. But here's the thing, like Woodley's data, which is the ClearSight Analytics data tracking every shot from a goalie's perspective, will tell you this. All season. So DeSmith's entire sample of games this season, according to the ClearSight data, DeSmith has allowed 2 total goals against on shots that weren't high danger. So 17 games played, 16 starts. That's what you want from your backup. Like, 2 goals all year that you'd be like, oh, man, we'd love to have that one back. That's it. Can't ask for more than that. You know, like, this guy's played well enough to get into games. And what's sort of odd to me is the Canucks were so disciplined about using DeSmith heavily in tough spots earlier in the year. Like, remember he got the Edmonton start in game 2 of the season?
Yep.
Remember he got the Florida start coming off those back-to-back losses in
there
Philadelphia and
Tampa? There were a couple of... Did he start against the Rangers in that? No, that was Demko. But there was a couple other, like, Saturday night games at Rogers Arena that DeSmith started.
Yeah.
And we were joking. Remember, Demko gets weekends off? Like, they gave, you know, high-profile games on hockey night on the at home, and DeSmith was getting those starts.
Well, he got the start in Ottawa and Montreal on that road trip. Like, so... And yeah, sorry, it was the Rangers.
He did play against the Rangers.
In October, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's like, Demko versus Shesterkin Saturday night, and they gave it to DeSmith.
Yeah, you're right. That's a marquee spot. So they were so disciplined early in the year about spotting DeSmith in some of these games. And, the practice thing, you know, we'll give him practices off instead of games. I don't know how much I buy it. Like, at the end of the day, every year we look in the playoffs and we're like, man, I really thought that team had an edge in that series. And then look at the goalies' games played, and it's like, oh, right, one guy's a lot fresher than the other.
And Dan Riccio was breaking it down, some of the numbers on Twitter. I'll crib off Riccio's work since they're cribbing off the whiteboard now on Canucks Central. So Demko will get his 46th start tonight, 20 games for the Canucks after this. So if you want to keep him to 60 or less, that means you need to find 6 starts for Casey DeSmith in those final 20 games, which is a fairly significant rate. And that's just to get to 60. I think if you had said at the beginning of the year, we would have said, like, ideally, you'd love to be at 55. That's not going to happen. There's always a bit of creep in that regard. But, you know, they have a couple games against Anaheim left. They have a couple games against Arizona, one of which is on the back half of a back-to-back. So those look like potential likely spots for Casey DeSmith. But beyond that, yeah, you're going to have to, you know, is it the Capitals on a Saturday at home against the Canucks? Is it the Habs on a Thursday? Right, you're going to have to not just kind of roll with the punches. And, Demko's a little tired, we'll get DeSmith in. You're going to have to go out of your way to find those spots to get DeSmith in here.
I just can't shake. Like, Adin Hill has had some injuries, but he's played 24 games. You know, like, they're doing it again. The Vegas sleeping giant model, right? Like, Georgiev's played 48, Saros 47, Demko 45, 46 tonight. 42 for Stuart Skinner, 42 for Connor Hellebuck, who I think is... I don't think we're talking enough, actually, about how Hellebuck...
How good Hellebuck has been.
Well, because it's not just good, it's historic, right? I mean, put it this way, I'll read you goalie save percentages among players who've played 40 games or more, okay? Bennington, 909, Sorokin, 910, Skinner, 904, Bobrovsky, 916, Demko, 917, Saros, 905, Georgiev, 900. Now, this reflects the fact that save percentage is dropping pretty much across the NHL. Connor Hellebuck, 925. Like, he's head and shoulders better than everybody else.
And that's like 925, that was impressive 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with where save percentages are, that's like what a 935 plus would have been 10 years ago. You know what I mean? Like, 925 was elite already then. Now that's otherworldly, given what's happening around the league.
And to give you context, 35 goaltenders in the NHL have started more than 25 games. 2 are above 920.
Mm-hmm.
Swayman is the only other one who, you know, he's played 10 fewer games, and it's at exactly 920. Hellebuck's at 925. Like, this is... degrees better than everybody else that Hellebuck's hit.
Absolutely ridiculous.
He's sick.
Yeah.
So sick. And I actually was thinking about this yesterday because I was noticing just a crop up of Matthews MVP debate again. He should be a contender. I mean, this is the best goal scorer of his generation having a signature season. You've also got one of the great winners in hockey carrying a team that is shallower than it's been in recent years in Colorado to contender level on an every night basis. You've also got literally the best hockey playing human on the planet pacing for 136 points. And by the way, like I McDavid could absolutely hit 150.
Yep. He's on a 164 point pace since like our Jay Fresh had it on his Twitter feed since like early December or something. It's
insane.
Outrageous.
Insane. And went 10 games without scoring a goal.
Yeah.
Sure. You've got Kucherov already at 100 points with 22 games remaining on his schedule, willing a team with no business otherwise making the playoffs. Like, have you gone and looked at the names of defensemen that Tampa Bay has played this year?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my God. Like, do it. Do it and try to, like, they've played 14 different defensemen, and I promise you.
Oof.
And I promise you, you haven't heard of six of them. Like, and that's not a knock.
That's all right.
No.
I know.
Like, they have a defenseman named Crozier. Sure. Right? I mean, I think I went to university with that guy. Honestly, like, and then you've got Hughes. And I think Hughes needs to be considered too. Like, this is wild stuff. He completely alters the game every time he's on the ice. This is the most exciting. Like, I don't know that it's that difficult an assignment to pick an MVP from that group. Like, for me, MacKinnon should be leading.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the most exciting group. Like a kaleidoscope of just exceptional, in some cases historic performances from across the league. It's as like busy and fun an MVP class, potential MVP class as I can remember, and I think says a lot about where the product is right now.
No doubt about it. We will wrap it up there. Game day today for the Canucks. They take on the LA Kings for the first time this year. Should be a good one. I'm looking forward to it. We'll be back for a Friday edition of the show tomorrow to break it all down. Enjoy the game. Keep it right here on Sportsnet 650.